Welcome to Are You Real? Finding the Authentic You, the podcast that focuses on Christians that are active in everyday life. Join in as we speak to everyone from successful business owners to educators to athletes about their faith and how it helps them reach out and revolutionize those around them to do the same. And now get ready to roar with your host, the voice of manifestation, John Fuller.
Hey, Roar Nation, John Fuller here, fired up and excited to introduce my not new but special guest, Jody Holland. Jody, you ready to rock this thing, my friend?
I'm ready to rock and I'm ready to roar.
Come on, somebody. All right, so Roar Nation, check this out. It's been a while. As you know, Jody has done a show in the past called Success. He also has been on several shows with me, and we always have fun conversations, different things. And what makes it fun about Jody is he is a master book writer. The guy has written like over 20 books. Is that right, Jody?
I've got, 17 published in print, and then I think 5 ebooks that are out there as well. So, yeah, over 20.
You are a content writing machine, my friend.
I like to write stuff down.
Yeah, it's obviously. Hey, you know, I saw this thing, or what do you call it? I think it was like on 2020 one time. It was years ago. But this guy had spent his entire life, literally everything that he did, minute by minute, step by step. If he went out to the mailbox, he would come back and he would write it in his journal or his computer that what he did at that minute and went to the. So they basically said he had the perfect alibi because he knew what he did every minute of every day.
That's crazy, man. I'm not at that level. I believe that level requires medication to overcome.
Dude, that's no joke, man. I don't know if anybody's ever been that way. I thought it was kind of weird, but it was different.
That's funny.
So, all right. So, Jody, for fun today, your new book, I do want to talk about because I think it's important for readers to check out. And it's fun, too, when I like it. But your new book is called Faces of Reality.
Yeah. So Faces of Reality is all about how you look at a person's face and understand the psychology of what's behind that facial structure. So you think about how you feel when you first meet a person. So we get a sense or a vibe off of a person. I think most listeners will say that they've met somebody at some point that they immediately knew that they did not like them.
I feel terrible, and that is true. There is people I meet, and I'm like, obviously, I'm like, there's just something about this person I do not like.
Right, and so a lot of times we just don't know what it is, but we have the ability to understand some of the science behind that. You know, God gives us gifts, and one of the gifts that I've been given is the ability to simplify very complex things. That's why I write, is because I believe that's what I'm called to do, because that's what I feel created for. So in simplifying the complexity of that first impression or that connection, when you can understand how a person makes decisions, how to approach them, you know, what they need from you, combining some of the structure of the face with just good old-fashioned reading a person or going deeper and going even into micro expressions that a person exhibits, you get connected. And I think that in this world that's driven so much by technology and so much by that disconnect of, well, I can be a virtual somebody, you know, get my artificial self-importance by enough likes, but to be a real person, that takes work.
Now, I don't have a lot of likes, Jody. Does that mean
No, it means you're authentic, John. That's what that means.
Yes, I appreciate that.
I think that what's so cool about understanding this science is called physiognomy. Easy pronunciation is face reading. But when you start understanding the science, it breaks the face down into 5 basic areas that help you understand how a person makes decisions, how a person projects themselves into the world, what are the insecurities or the things that hold that person back, how do they evaluate themselves, and then when information is coming in or going out, from a communication standpoint, how do they process that? So you understand those 5 key areas about a person, you can connect with virtually anyone.
Okay, so hold on, time out. We're going to have fun with this. Let's break it down, because I'm just curious. So for our listeners, because if I was listening to this podcast, I'm going to come at it from a listener's standpoint. So first area, what was the first one that you mentioned?
First one is decision-making.
Okay. So hold on. I'm writing this down because I'm curious. Plus we'll put it in this show notes. Okay. So decision-making, how...
Forehead.
Okay, that's what was my next question. So that's the forehead. Okay.
Yeah, so you look at a person's forehead from a side profile. So think about looking at, you see their ear and the side of their face. From a side profile, their forehead will either be rounded or it will look flat across. So flat forehead is logic. Rounded forehead is emotion. The forehead will either be tall, average, or short in its height. So a tall forehead, that's an individual that tends to overthink everything that's going on in their world.
Because they have a big brain.
You could call it that, or you could just say they obsess a little too much, whichever way makes you feel better. intellect is actually measured based on where the ears sit in relationship to the eyebrows.
Okay.
So totally different part on how smart a person is, but the overthinking, I think, drives people crazy. I mean, because how many times have you tried to make a decision and then you go, okay, but what about this? Okay, but what about that? Or you lay down at night and you just can't go to sleep because you can't get your mind to shut off. I mean, there's a lot of people out there, probably a lot of your listeners, that are going, hey, I'm an overthinker as well. So that's tall forehead.
So I'd be curious, because I would say I don't have a tall forehead.
Yeah, you, but you kind of, I would say average, so you don't over, but you don't underthink it as well.
Because my problem is I lay in bed and I can think, if I don't take like a melatonin or something to chill my thoughts, like I can literally just think myself all night until I fall asleep at like 2 a.m.
I think part of that is you own several businesses, John.
That could be the problem.
So you've just filled your life with so many things to keep up with that it's going to be hard to shut it off at all.
Very true.
My wife and I have been learning about the Hebrew calendar, and they say you're supposed to work from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. That's what the Hebrew calendar describes. And then from 6 to 8, your family works together to cook dinner, eat dinner, and clean up after dinner. And then from 8 to 10 is just relax and do whatever you need to do, but don't work. And that whole idea, if you shut off work at exactly 6 p.m., by the time you went to bed, your mind would be relaxed.
That's interesting. Where did you find that?
It was actually in a book she's been reading. I'm trying to remember the name of the book. I think it's called Real Simplicity. Yeah, Real Simplicity. And it talks about just how you organize your life in such a way that you're able to close it off when you need to.
I like that. That's a great idea. Okay, so let's go to two. The first one was decision-making, second part of the face.
So one more thing on decision-making. When the forehead is short, that actually doesn't mean that they don't think. It means they use their instinct.
So you're not calling them stupid?
No, I'm not. So it's some people have street smarts, some people have intellectual smarts. The intellectual smarts is the tall forehead. The street smarts is the shorter forehead. So second area, though, is how we project. So you're just coming down the face. So you're going to look at the eyebrows and the ridge that goes on the brow for some people, and then the eyes right up to the top of the cheekbone. So eyebrows are either flat, rounded, or when you raise them, some people have what looks like a rooftop. So the left-hand side of a person's face has to do with their personal life, and the right hand has to do with their working life. Now, this is not like reading tarot cards or palms or anything. This is a reflection of what's already happened in a person's life.
So wait, real quick, you said the left side of the face is personal?
Yeah, left side of a person's face is their personal life. The right-hand side of the face is their working life.
Okay.
So for a kid, that would be school, not work, on the right-hand side.
Okay, so wait, time out real quick. So a lot of times, like, you go places, I'm just thinking it would be harder to read women in the sense that, like, they – like, guys obviously don't pluck their eyebrows or fill them in or use eyeliner or all that. So yeah. I'm just curious, how do you navigate through that one when you have people who pluck and fill and all kinds of stuff?
That's an excellent question. Dr. Maxwell Maltz, who's a psychiatrist after he became a plastic surgeon, what he said was that people try to reshape their face to fit what they want other people to see, but not what they actually see in themselves. And so what's interesting is that when a person overdoes it on makeup or whatever else, they're trying to project an image. So, for example, coloring your eyebrows in darker and thicker than what they really are. That says I'm trying to present myself as more assertive than I actually am in my own mind. So they're trying to shift the image of other people or the external perspective, even though you know internally they're a little different than that. So you do have to really pay very close attention on anyone that reshapes a portion of their face, because they're trying to modify what you think of them, even though they're not really modifying what they think of themselves that much.
Okay, so what about, I'm just having fun with this because I'm just kind of thinking about this, but what about, because guys don't have this issue, so what about a woman that has like lip fillers? That would throw you, I would think that would really throw you off because they could have had small lips, but now they got big old plumpy lips or something.
Yeah, and you know, again, the you know, using the lip liner, for example, and I've got two daughters and a wife. If you use that lip liner, it makes your lips look more full. So when the top lip comes out and the bottom lip is more in, that's trustworthy. When the bottom lip is out and the top lip is in, that's a little more trying to be sensual. So you have these variances. Most people, though, they try to make the whole thing bigger. So when your mouth looks larger, that means you're more gregarious and outgoing. So they are trying to modify the way it looks, but back to the eyebrows for just a sec. If they're flat, approach that person with task before relationship. So you're trying to get to the point very quickly before you go around and try to build rapport. If it's rounded, you want to spend time building rapport and then get to business. And if it's arched, then you need to always give that person options because they really like a sense of control and they do not like surprises. Don't throw them surprise parties. Don't stand behind doors and scare them at Halloween. They like to keep things under control. That's the rooftop or the arch in the eyebrow. Now, if the eyebrows grow together, that's another indicator that your mind doesn't shut off. And it's also an indicator of a tendency towards making decisions that lead to wealth.
Interesting. Okay. Yep. So let's do, you want to go to three?
Yeah, let's go to three, which is insecurities. And so you're going to look at a couple of things here. Most of what you read on insecurities are in the nose.
Wait, hold on. This, since I get to, this is my show, I get to ask all kinds of questions. This is
sure.
fun.
Yeah.
Let's go back to two. So, okay. And the reason I'm going to bring this up is because talking about the eyebrows, how to approach people. Some people might be like, oh, well, this is stupid. This is just face reading or whatever. But give me an instance, because I know you use this in sales, which is great.
Oh, yeah.
But let's just say we're not a person doing sales. We're, you know, relationship with our spouse or people that we just meet. Where has been an instance that, like, maybe even recently that comes to mind where you walked into a situation, you didn't, let's just say for the average person, we don't know a lot. So I'm just going to try to learn eyebrows real quick.
Okay.
And you walk in and you're like, hey, this is how I need to approach this person. And it helped you.
Well, I'm going to use even just my wife. When I first started learning this, she's got a strong spike in her left hand eyebrow, which means likes control in personal life. So one of the things that I adjusted based on once I learned how to do this was I didn't try to control her or the situation. I always came in with a couple of options. So as long as you have a couple of options, hey, babe, I would really like to go out to dinner tonight. I'm really kind of craving a steak. So do you prefer Longhorn or do you prefer Hofbräu? And so you give them a couple of options and they go, I prefer Hofbräu. Now, the steak was what I wanted, but the options were what she needed. And so it simplified that age-old debate between husband and wife of what do you want to eat tonight? Oh, anything you want. Okay, great. What about Hofbräu? No, I'm not really craving that. Okay, well, what about this? Well, I don't know about that. What about this? I don't know. And finally, you get frustrated with each other and you grab a hamburger at Burger King, you know, and go home. But I think the thing is when you understand that a person just needs two options, three options, five options is overwhelming for somebody that likes control. Two is perfect. So other examples of that would be when I'm presenting to a person in a sales setting, I'm going to look to see, do I need to get down to business or do I need to spend a few minutes building rapport? So those rounded eyebrow people, I don't jump straight into a presentation. I talk about what's on their wall or in their office and just connect for a little bit, and then I move into business. But it takes 3 or 4 minutes of rapport building before they start to trust you.
I'm curious on this. So for people that are in business or sales, I mean, all of us are doing some type of sales. Did you notice a difference later on in your career once you learned this versus when you were doing presenting versus like earlier in your career and then now?
Oh, yeah. I closed fairly well anyway. I mean, I worked at it for about, I don't know, a year and a half, and then I got pretty good at closing, read a ton of books on it. But once I got to this, it just became easy. So you're not having to force something. You're learning how to adapt you to be who that other person
is. Yeah, to their personality, like what they like.
Yeah. As opposed to me just trying to be persuasive and magnetic and whatever. Some people need you to be subtle. And so when you learn how to adapt to what that person needs in any relationship, sales, marriage, with your children, at church, then you learn to connect. And in the end, I think that's what we're called to do, is to connect at a deeper level so that we can have a positive influence with people. So it's not about convincing somebody to do something, because sometimes I connect with people and I realize, you know what, I'm really not a good fit for this company. And so I'll back off and say, hey, kind of the vibe I'm getting here is that you do need some help, but I don't think I'm it. Can I make some recommendations of people that might be perfect for you? You get a lot of respect when you learn to read a person at a deep enough level that you get them what they need, not just what you want to sell them.
I like that. That's really good. Yeah, we definitely do need to connect on a deeper level. Okay, so let's go to insecurities. Where am I seeing that in somebody's face?
Mostly on their nose and their upper lip. So the space between the top lip and the nose shows you their capacity for delayed gratification. The longer the lip, the more they'll work hard and wait around for the thing that matters. The shorter the upper lip, the more they want everything right now. In the nose, there are several things that you see. First thing you look for is a bump on the bridge of the nose. If the person has a bump on the bridge of their nose, it means they have defensiveness in their personality. Where the bump sits will tell you when in their life they became defensive. The higher up the bump is, the younger they were when they became defensive, with about 7 years old being the youngest that it will register on the nose. And it gets down close to the tip of the nose, that's within the last 2 or 3 years.
This is the point of the show where everybody looks in their mirror real quick and says, exactly. Am I defensive and where?
Take a selfie. I've been defensive since second grade when that teacher in Canadian called me stupid.
Oh my gosh, that is so funny. I was just thinking about like anybody driving down the road right now looking in the rear mirror going, am I defensive? Where's it at? Oh, do I have one?
You know what happens more often, though, is they pull out pictures of their spouse and their kids and go, is that what the problem is?
That's awesome. That's funny. The first thing I'm thinking about is myself, but that's funny. I'm sure a lot of people will be like, that's why they're that way.
Exactly. So a really wide bridge of the nose is a really strong will, like an iron will to get things done. The thinner bridge of the nose, if the nose isn't popping way out from the head, is more of a, I'm going to just kind of go with the flow. I don't have to have it my way. Now, if the nose sits way out, so like you can tell that it blocks left from right eye really strongly at the top of the bridge, those people really like to separate their work from their personal. They get insecure when they tend to cross over. And then the final piece I'll talk about on the nose is some people on the end of their nose have what looks like a little ball on the end of the nose, so a nice round spot at the very tip. Those people are insecure if they're ever left out of the loop, so they need to be kept in the loop on information. You'll also find that most reporters, particularly TV reporters, they have a ball on the end of their nose because they like to be in the loop on everything.
So would you refer to them as nosy?
Yes, I would. So if a person's nose goes way out, that is actually what it means, is that they stick their nose into other people's business, even when they really shouldn't.
So if it sticks out far and has a little ball on there, they're like, they want to
know everything, and they're getting in your business whether you like it or not.
That is hilarious, man. Okay, yeah. So let's go to four.
Okay, so four is how we evaluate self, and that is the chin area. So look from the lower lip down to the bottom of the chin. So when you look there, you're looking first off, is there a little line that's in between the lower lip and the bottom of the chin? So if there's a little line, looks like a little arch or a crease in the skin there, that would indicate that a person responds very well to verbal affirmation. So part of how they evaluate themselves is, are people actually giving me compliments and noticing the things that I'm doing? So you tie this over to the five love languages, for example, that line in conjunction with one component of the ear that we'll get to in a minute, but that line says, I need words of affirmation. I need you to notice what I did and compliment.
So what does that look like again?
It just looks like a little crease. So look between your lower lip and the bottom of your chin, about halfway there. Some people have a crease line and some people do not.
Like going, it's going vertical?
It's going horizontal.
Horizontal. So okay. So it's up underneath my lip. So right is, okay. Yeah. It dips in.
Correct.
Okay.
So if they have that crease there, that line there, which all of this is illustrated in my book, but if they have that little crease there, that indicates I need affirmation. Now, what's interesting is when they don't have the crease. When they don't have the crease or that little kind of arch there, that little rounded piece, that means that if you go give them a compliment, they will immediately question what you're trying to get from them. So they have a distrust because their self-evaluation is, nobody should get compliments unless it's tied to something very specific. So a you're so pretty or you're so awesome is going to make them roll their eyes and go, you're such a dork and leave me alone.
So now this one would be harder, I think, for men. Maybe not so much in business because most people shave or clean cut. But like for obvious, I have facial hair. You have facial hair. How do you read that on people for like men that have more facial hair? Is that harder?
Oh, yeah. I mean, my little brother looks like a sea captain and there's no way to see his chin. So you can't tell whether there's a crease there or not. But when a person grows facial hair, they're trying to, the same way that when a woman shapes her eyebrows, they're trying to create a different image in other people's minds than the one they have in their own. When I started growing facial hair, I was trying to make people think that I was older and wiser. And that was my reason.
So what am I trying to do then?
I think you're trying to make people believe that you're a little tougher than you are.
My facial hair makes me make them think I'm tougher?
That's just my guess. You work really hard, but you're such a tender-hearted guy. The facial hair actually projects a strong image. And could be what you're adjusting. I don't know. It could be something else. I mean, you don't really know based on the facial hair. You just know that there's some shift that they're trying to make. One of the other shifts for me is to not look like the cue ball on the pool table.
Why is that, Jody?
Since I'm bald, growing the facial hair actually gives me a little bit of something up there since there's nothing on top.
That is funny.
So then the bottom of the chin is next. This is the
five?
Evaluation.
Are we still on four?
We're still on four.
Okay.
Bottom of the chin will be shaped either square, yours is definitely square, rounded, or kind of almost to a point for the shape of the end of the chin. The square chin, like you have, like I have, that indicates a person that evaluates themselves based on goals and accomplishments. Square chin people tend to not be as good of listeners because they're thinking of the next thing that needs to happen. So you and I both have had to train ourselves to listen and not to talk over people. The round chin people judge themselves based on accomplishment through relationships, so what they believe other people think of them as opposed to what they actually got done. So they are naturally great listeners and will sit and listen to you even if you're whiny that day. Square chin people, if you're whiny, they'll say, you know what? Suck it up, buttercup. We all have problems. Dude, you just move on.
That ain't no joke.
So we're not as patient sometimes as the round chin people are.
That's funny you said that. That was a really hard thing for me to learn, especially when I was – I think I really didn't realize that till my early 30s, that I always talk over people. And I still do at times, but especially on my show because I got questions. But now I just try to listen to people talk, especially in business and stuff when we're doing different things. But it's like always having an opinion or wanting to say something. Now I just am like, nobody really cares what I have to say. I'll just listen.
Yeah, and I think that's a lesson for all of us, is that although what I have to say may be completely brilliant in my own mind, if I'm listening to react instead of listening to understand, I'm never going to be truly connected.
Yeah, there's a lot of truth in that, because there is people that are looking just for you to say something so they can combat it and blast you.
Exactly.
Especially and that's really good to learn, too, if you think about that, really in debate, too, with all the things that are going on, whether it's politics, religion, all the things. You know, a lot of times we're not really listening to hear what that person has to say or their heart behind it. We're listening to how are we going to counter what they have to say, and we can make them look stupid.
Yeah, we're listening to prove our point, not to understand their perspective. Hmm. And I think that if more of us would just learn the four steps to being a great listener, life would really work a lot better.
We should jump into four steps of a great listener after. We'll end with great listening, because everybody needs great listening skills. Okay, so we did how we self-evaluate, and now we're on five.
Yeah, number five is how you communicate or process the world. That's your ears. So if you've ever taken what's called the VAC learning model test, VAK.
I'm sure all of our listeners have.
Yeah. Well, any of the psychology majors out there, you've probably been exposed. But it's visual, auditory, or kinesthetic processing. So a visual processor from a physical structure will have smaller ears and a larger iris. So more intake through the eyes, less through the ears. Logical. The person who is the auditory processor, they're going to have larger ears. They usually come out from the head just a little bit, and smaller iris. So more intake through the ears, less through the eyes. The kinesthetic people are the easiest to notice, because it looks like the outside edge of their ear, about halfway down, folds back. So the inner ear ridge sticks out further than the outer ear ridge. These are your kinesthetics, or the ones that it's action and emotion. They generally have very good intuition. They just can't always explain why they think the way that they think. So in an interview setting, for example, you might be interviewing someone for a job. A kinesthetic person might go, I just get a sense that they're really good and we should give them a shot. Or I don't know what it was about them. I just didn't feel right. That's the way they'll explain it. Whereas a logical person would say, an auditory, which is logical, they would say, well, the way that they answered that question indicated to me that they don't actually have the capacity for self-responsibility. That's the part that frustrated me. And I really feel like there's going to be three steps, and they go on and on. That's the auditory. So when you're processing information in, a lot of that has to do with your left ear. And when you're processing information out, that's more on your right ear. So, for example, one of the things that the American Medical Association indicated is that when you look at a person's left ear and it looks almost chewed up in the upper portion, this is an indicator that they have potentially dyslexia. So that's the can't read it, my words get jumbled, that kind of stuff. If that looks like that on the right, then they can read just fine, but getting it from their head back onto paper to write a paper, that's going to be a real struggle for them.
So, hold on real quick. I'm just curious. Have you ever tested that as far as like people that are dyslexic and asked them, when you see that? And
it's pretty dang accurate.
Whoa.
An example would be one of the executives that I worked with in a hospital. They were ready to fire the guy because he just wouldn't write reports. And so he could hear just fine, and he could speak just fine, and he could read it just fine. It was just writing reports that was giving him a lot of fits. So his right ear looked kind of chewed up in the upper portion of it. So I went and bought him a software like Dragon Dictation, put it on the computer. And then they called me about 2 weeks later, like, what in the world did you do to this guy? He writes reports about everything now. Like, he just needed to speak it. He couldn't get it from his head to his fingers, but he could get it from his head out his mouth. And so that dyslexia has to do with words on paper more than anything else.
And you said that's the right ear?
The right ear is getting it from your mind to paper. Your left ear would be getting it from the paper into your mind.
Well, I'm trying to figure out if my ear's chewed up or not. I don't think it is.
I'd have to look at another close-up of you.
We're going to have fun with this since we know each other that well. I am sending you an ear selfie. This is awesome, Jody. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, so send me your ear selfie. Let's see what we got there.
were, cause I have a hard time writing. I'm in the process of writing another book on power of words, and, but I'm talking about a whole thing about, so I'm really trying to be careful about the things that I say as whether I'm good or bad at something or not. So that being said, I'm not going to say I'm bad. Did you get my ear selfie?
Yeah, you do not have any form of dyslexia. You might have a little bit of ADD, but you don't have dyslexia.
Interesting.
I'm joking on the ADD. I just know how busy you are. So a couple of things that you notice, though, is when you're looking at the ear, that tells you when there were perception shifts. So you had a perception shift in the way that you work around 23, 24 years old. Now you also had another one in what you thought about school around 18 years old. So you see the little knots that are on your right ear. That's what that would indicate, is that you've shifted the way that you view the world. I don't know if it's good or if it's bad. It's just different. So you can say something happened in your life at 18 and something else at 23, 24 years old that would indicate that you shifted perceptions related to work and or school.
Yeah, it's interesting. So for our listeners, just to have a little fun with that. So at 18, I found out that my dad wasn't my biological dad. We had like this huge disaster. My parents got divorced. And I like was determined to leave home and, really never come back. I really didn't have a choice. I ended up playing football in college. So I left, never came home. And then at 23, we bought our first business at 20. And then, I would actually say at like 23, 24 really started pressing into the word and just like trying to discover me, like what God had to say about me, and really just trying to find identity and just how I perceived. And then also I had like somewhat like mentors, business people step into my life and say, hey, you should do X, Y, or Z or things like that. So anyways, right somewhere around that age, that's pretty fun.
Yeah. So that's like the rings of a tree. You can tell when it was a good year or a bad year. With a person, you look at the outer ear ridge and it tells you if there's a knot or a V in there, it tells you whether or not they had a shift in perception. The very, very top, up and down, is 18 years old. Going towards the face, that little short part of the outer ear ridge, that would go down to 14. And then going around, you've got to be able to judge a person's age and then compare space between 18 and the age that they are now. And that would tell you whether or not they had a shift in perception.
So what's the V? I'm curious, because I have a little V in my left ear.
Okay, send me a picture of your left ear now.
Oh, this is funny. This is so weird. I've never done this on a show before. This is hilarious.
Yeah, man, I'm telling you, it took me 5 years of research to put this book together. This wasn't like a sit down and write what you're thinking kind of deal. It was a holy cow, this is a lot of work. And we did research projects on VAC learning model, on personality. So you can tell the temperament of a person based on the combination of chin and forehead. You add a few other things and you can tell the variance between, say, a dominant or conscientious personality and so on.
So let me ask you this, though, because when I hear you say that, so the first thing that comes to mind is like, one, and I think most of our listeners are going to be like, well, I'm not that interested. I'm not going to spend 5 years trying to learn this. And that's a lot. But what are like, where would be some key places you think for listeners to say, like, if like me that are kind of interested, would like to relate better with people, but I don't have years to learn this?
Well, that's the reason for the book, is that you try to simplify exactly what all of this is. So my gift is to simplify complicated things. You don't need 5 years. You need probably about 6 hours of reading, and then just go back and pick the parts of the book that you want to study to get a little more depth in there.
Gotcha.
So you've got a couple of shifts on your personal life. I just got the picture of your ear. You shifted around 20 years old into 19, 20 years old, and then you shifted again around 25, 26 years old. So what happened at those stages of your life?
20 years old is really when I felt like I just kind of dedicated my life to the Lord and was kind of like, I'm all in or nothing, like I'm going to die or make this work. So that was like a spiritual shift, which was huge in my life. And then 25, man, I had like multiple businesses going on at that time. Casey and I were trying to figure out how to be married, how to have, oh, by 25, I had 3 kids, 2 businesses, and we were trying to figure out how to be married.
Yeah. So a lot going on at that age.
Yeah. It was really complicated.
So, yeah. Well, you started, I'm sure, getting a handle on it because you had some shifts that happened there that changed the way you were looking at life. Because I think some, my wife and I were talking about this on the way home from church, that when you think about the way that you live your life, when you allow God to flow through you, you don't have to complicate things. But so often we go, yeah, God, I'm good with you. Now I'm going to force this to happen. And we just push and push and push, as opposed to allowing the Holy Spirit to be a part of us and allowing God to just flow through our lives. So I think that I shifted probably around 27 to, I'm going to make it happen no matter what. And I started just pushing on everything. And then more recently, a few years back, I guess right at about 3 years ago now, I woke up one day, I'd been studying some stuff, and I went, I'm making this difficult for no apparent reason. I think I'm just going to let life be easy. And it's really been pretty easy ever since then, because you allow God to flow through you and to arrange those divine connections.
Dude, that ain't no joke, man, because I think when we allow God to do what he wants to do in our life, obviously because he designed us, he know how he created us. Scripture says he has a perfect plan for us. But a lot of times, I remember, you know, early in my 20s and 30s, people would come up to me and just say, hey, you know, I really heard the Lord. I was praying for you, and this is what I heard. And I got several that, this is kind of funny now looking back, they're saying, man, I feel like you're way ahead of God. And he's like trying to tell you to, he's saying, slow down. And you're like in this race and you're way ahead. And he's saying, I need you to come back.
Yeah.
And man, I think especially if you're high driven, high D type personality, it's really important that you do just say, okay, God, what do you want to do? What are you doing? Because I'm going to screw this up.
And I think a lot of us do that. We run in front of God because we know better. And that's the whole thing about trying to force it to happen. I will make this happen, God. You just watch me. Oh, and yeah. Plus, away. As opposed to praying and saying, God, I want you to flow through me. I want to allow what you meant for my gifts to be to play out in this world.
Amen to that. That's good. Okay. So, Jody, as we wrap up the show, this was fun for me. I hope our listeners were totally digging this. Let's go real quick. Let's take about 5 minutes for 4 steps of great communication. Isn't that what you said?
Yeah, there's 4 steps to being a great listener.
Okay.
The 4 things are, first, you have to be focused on that other person. We're so distracted in this world that we tend to be texting or filling out paperwork or doing something else as opposed to just paying attention. Husbands and wives in particular, every day take time to stop everything else, get rid of the phone, get rid of the computer, and just be with that person. So step 1 is eliminate distractions and focus on that person. Step 2 is you have to respond non-verbally. I see so many people that are theoretically listening, but you can tell they're really not because they're kind of just staring at the person, which means their mind is somewhere else or thinking of something else. And they're not reacting. When you put your body into the listening process and you react physically to what a person is saying, facial expressions, body language, body movement, it lets the speaker know that you're really, really there.
Do you know how many wives are nudging their husbands right now?
Yes, and I'm also thinking pastors at church, like, yeah, when I'm speaking, do something, like move a little bit. Let me know the Holy Spirit's there, or at least your pulse is.
Yeah.
So I think wives in particular, women are more naturally good listeners because of the connections between the left and right hemisphere of the brain. As women have a corpus callosum with 8 times the number of connections as a male brain does. So they really do have an advantage on listening. So men, I'm giving you a little bit of an excuse, but then I'm also saying you have to work harder. So don't just say, oh, well, I'm not wired for that. Say, okay, I'm going to put more effort into this because I do need to work harder. So step three in being a great listener is you've got to ask questions. If you will stay focused on that person to the point where when they're speaking, you ask clarifying questions. Tell me more about that. So how did you feel when that happened? You know, wow, what was really going on? Anything like that, it really beefs up the conversation and lets them know that you're truly in the conversation with them. And then the final piece is what's called active or reflective listening. When the person speaks and they say something, it's a good idea from time to time to summarize. So what you're saying is, or if I understand you correctly, and then you fill in the blanks. You can also use it for emotional context. So let's say my wife tells me about a day of teaching at school, and I say, man, that must have been stressful. Even if I get it wrong and she says, well, no, it wasn't really stressful. It was more just intense. Well, then I go back to step three. Oh, intense. How do you mean? And she can describe it further. So you create this back and forth flow in communication when you use those four steps. I think those are critically important for any relationship, but especially marriage. I think that matters the most.
I got to tell you, so on your last active or reflective listening, mm-hmm. So this will be fun. If you haven't read this book, you're going to enjoy it. I heard it on another podcast, but the book is called Never Split the Difference.
Yes, I've seen it. I haven't read it yet.
Okay. So I bought the book, but you know, I drive a lot. So I ended up listening to it on my drive. I listened to it and then I read kind of as I was listening. It's by Chris Voss. Anyways, it is one of the funnest books I've ever read. So just so you understand real quick, he was the head negotiator for the FBI in the world for counterterrorism, kidnapping, stuff like that.
Yeah.
He basically takes his philosophies and theories on negotiating into business. But his number one technique that he talks about was the reflective listening, which was really interesting because that's what he used that for negotiating. And he talks about like people, what makes the book fun is like he tells you a story about, hey, this is what I did in a terrorist or a bank robbing deal. And then he teaches that skill to one of his students and they go to use it in business or the classroom or whatever. And the kids or like the student or somebody's like, I can't believe that worked. That was amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing what you can do when you're just a good listener.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. So anyways, well, Jody, we're going to wrap this show up. What, where can for fun, cause this is a fun topic. This is something I would hope people, take a little bit of interest in. If you want to be a better communicator, better spouse, better with your kids, business, work, whatever, where do we find your book and how do we connect with you?
So Amazon is the easiest place to find the book. Just look for Faces of Reality or search for Jody Holland. And I'm sending you actually the link so that you can share that in the show notes as well. Okay. Or they could just go to jodyholland.com, JodyHolland.com.
Come on, somebody. Well, that was fun. All right. Jody, I'm going to be a great listener. So you get the last word before I wrap up the show.
Okay, my last word is actually not going to be about me or the book, but it's going to be, hey, Roar Nation, if you've not gotten connected with John Fuller, if you've not been sharing the show with others, what are you waiting for? Reach out and revolutionize the world and make sure that you roar every day.
Come on now. All right, Jody, hold on just a second. So Roar Nation, Jody is awesome. He's been a good friend of mine for years now. And I hope this encouraged you and at least gave you a skill. Now, I'm really curious. It was totally different than a normal show we normally do. So if you would take a minute, please send me an email and just let me know kind of your thoughts. Or actually, it would mean more to me if you did it on Facebook because it's easier for me to get those. Just kind of your thoughts and your intake on what we had to talk about. And if you would like more stuff like this that's more informational for the future, I'd love to know. So anyways, Roar Nation, I love you. Get on iTunes, rate and review us, and leave a comment, please. A lot of you guys have been getting on there. I appreciate it. Leaving reviews, but I need comments because I want to read them off. So love you guys. Have a blessed week. And remember, be real, be authentic, and be you. God bless.
That's all for this episode of Are You Real? Finding the Authentic You. Be sure to go to rureal.org for your free questionnaire to identify your gifts and talents and how you can use them to help people become leaders and catapult them into their destiny to help others become the leaders of tomorrow. We appreciate you spending your time with us and look forward to helping you reach out and revolutionize next time on Are You Real? Finding the Authentic You.